Support for The Andrew Haynes Show is brought to you by LiveSource, the premier app for auctions at live events. LiveSource is an online auction and raffle platform that allows your fans and supporters to bid and buy from their phones and computers from anywhere. LiveSource cannot be simpler or more effective, which is why more than 300 professional and collegiate sports teams and thousands of charities and athletes utilize their services to generate revenue and collect data. If you sign up with LiveSource now, you will benefit from their lowest possible pricing and they'll waive their upfront fees. You can email them at hello@livesourceapp.com. That's hello, H-E-L-L-O, at livesourceapp.com. Hello and welcome back to The Andrew Haynes Show. In today's episode, we sat down with Haley Moore, the president of the Boston Pride of the NWHL. Haley played collegiate women's hockey at Brown University, and after graduation was a coach and administrator at the collegiate and youth level. Following the inception of the NWHL in 2015, Haley joined the Boston Pride and has since been entrenched in professional women's hockey. Here's her story. We hope you enjoy.
All right, we're back for another show. Today, I've got Haley Moore with me. She is the team president for the Boston Pride in the National Women's Hockey League, professional hockey. So that's going to be fun to talk to her. How's it going, Haley?
Hey, thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you could join me. And, I'm fascinated with the business side of sports. I'm like a nerd when it comes to that. Like, I want to know how teams and leagues work and, you know, what successes and challenges people face. And, you know, when you're a team president too, how'd you get there? You know, I have a untraditional path, but I like to hear about people's journey. So why don't you start with that? Like, you know, where are you from and kind of how you got into sports?
Yeah, absolutely. Hockey's definitely been a part of my life since as long as I can remember. So that's been kind of where my journey started. For my fourth birthday, I asked for hockey equipment, and the rest is history.
Nice.
So that's where the story, I guess, began. But I fell in love with the sport at a really young age. My older brother played, and that's, you know, how I got into it. I wanted to be just like him, and I fell in love with it. I was the only girl to play in my town to start off. And those numbers kept growing over the years. And just to see how far the sport has come since those days is pretty remarkable. But I grew up playing hockey among other sports. And, I eventually wanted to continue through high school, and there was no girls hockey at the high school in my town. So like a lot of people, you know, shipped off to boarding school. I went to Cushing Academy, which is a pretty big hockey school. Out in our area, produced a lot of great hockey players, and was able to continue playing there at a high level and be surrounded by people who, you know, wanted the same things as me and wanted to, you know, continue to play the game at the collegiate level. So, Cushing definitely prepared me for that. And that led me to Brown University, where I was able to play college hockey there and ironically studied biology, which is, you know, not really getting put to good use right now.
Can we tie it in somehow? Maybe. I don't
know. You know, I like to think that in order to be successful working in sports, you need to understand how the body works, what athletes go through. So it was a human biology major. So, you know, I tie it in that way. I really didn't know what I wanted to do when I was in college, and those are the classes that I enjoyed. You know, I loved being able to learn about the body and apply it to sports. And for me, you know, I was definitely a student athlete, but I was so focused on hockey in college too. It was like, you couldn't even see what life after that was going to look like. And I remember, you know, as a kid growing up, just asking my parents, like, what was I going to do when I was older? Like, what professional league was I going to play in? And they would always say to me, oh, you know, like, there's going to be a women's league for you someday. Like, by the time you're older, like, you know, you're going to have a league to play in. And I just believed them, of course. Like, you know, I think it was the right advice for them to just tell me that I was going to have an opportunity. And actually, when I graduated, there really wasn't a lot of opportunity to continue playing beyond the Olympic level. And I'd trained with the national team, I'd been in the mix, but I wasn't I wasn't going to reach that ultimate goal. And on the women's side in North America, that was kind of it. That was our option. So I ended up going overseas and playing a season in Switzerland right after I graduated college. That was, you know, the opportunity for me to continue playing and get a little bit of a worldly experience and see another culture. But ultimately that was, you know, a one season thing. Came back and had to start my life outside of being a hockey player.
How tough was that? Just, you know, kind of, you know, anytime you're a competitor and you're, you know, an athlete, it's always, you know, not always, but you know, it's sometimes tough to get adjusted.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, as athletes, we tie ourselves and our identity to our sport so much. And, you know, academics were always important to me. It was, you know, what kind of led me through my college search and process. I knew that hockey wasn't going to be my career forever, or so I thought. I knew playing hockey wasn't going to be my career forever. And at that point, you know, I had to really kind of find myself once I graduated college. And I think that a lot of athletes kind of find themselves in that same position where you need to try to validate yourself outside of your sport. So those years, I still look back on them and remember how hard they were and how challenging they were, but I'm so thankful for them too, because I just, you know, I've realized that I pushed myself so far outside my comfort zone. You know, I got a job working consulting and I was, you know, working on biopharmaceutical regulations, and it was, you know, it was a world that I was so unfamiliar with, but I learned that I was able to be successful in something, you know, that was very uncomfortable for me.
When you were, you mentioned when you were a kid, you were the only, you know, female player. Like how, like, what was your mindset there? Like, how did that affect you? Did that kind of give you motivation? Were people like bullying you because of that? Like, I mean, I can imagine it's got to be tough being the only one, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, eventually I ended up joining some girls teams, but I played boys hockey until I went to high school. And it's funny because as a kid, like, things just kind of hit you differently. And I feel like I was so unfazed by it. I was like so much more comfortable and confident in myself. I just saw myself as a hockey player. And, you know, if anyone wanted to like make fun of me, I was just going to score a goal and shove it in their face. And like, you just like have that chip on your shoulder as a kid. And I am much more shy now than I was as a kid. I was just like, you know, this hockey's my thing. I'm good at it. I love it. I'm competitive. Like, and my teammates were all great. You know, the boys that I played with were all really protective of me, but they treated me just like everyone else. So in that sense, I felt like I belonged there. I think I felt like I belonged on the ice more than anywhere else in the world. So it didn't faze me when, you know, kids on the other team, you know, would make fun of the bow in my hair or my braid coming out of my helmet. Like, I just didn't care.
Right.
Because I loved it so much. And I just, you know, wanted to beat them. I would score a goal and celebrate in their face. And
that's the best. Yeah, the best revenge.
Exactly.
Would you say? No, that's good. How much has it changed since you were a kid? So what's it kind of look like now with female players?
Yeah, it's incredible. Like the amount of opportunity that exists now for girls to play and women professionally is it's just night and day from what I grew up seeing. Obviously now I work on behalf of a professional women's hockey league, which, you know, we're just entering our sixth season, so we're still pretty young, but to be able to be a part of building that and for young girls everywhere to see these professional players playing, that just means everything to me because it's opportunity that I never saw. You know, even being in the position that I am now, like being a female team president of a professional team, like that's not something I saw as a kid, and probably why I never knew what I wanted to be when I grew up, because, you know, I didn't think about working in sports. Like that was, you know, for all intents and purposes, like it was a man's job. I saw coaches that were men. I didn't have a female coach until college. So, I think that all of the opportunities that exist now are just showing young girls that like really anything is possible, but the number of girls teams that exist, the high school opportunities, the junior opportunities, the college opportunities, like everything is booming. And it's just so awesome to see. But I definitely see a lot of it, you know, both at the youth level and at the professional level through our league and through that lens. It's really definitely powerful.
Yeah, no, it's good to see. And it's unfortunate that it's taken this long to kind of, you know, get there, but hopefully it'll get caught up soon. I was just talking with somebody, you know, I've owned some soccer teams and things like that, and indoor soccer specifically. And somebody was like, you know, it's too bad there wasn't a women's league there. You know, and this guy I was talking to, he had, you know, two daughters that play, and he's like, there's no opportunity for them there. So I think you're going to see a lot more opportunities kind of coming about, you know, throughout all the sports. Hopefully it'll get caught up. So how do you go from, you know, now you're in the bio, whatever,
yeah,
like way above my pay grade. But you're in kind of maybe corporate America. How did you get your first, and what was your kind of first opportunity back in hockey then?
Yeah. So it's interesting, because I was kind of fighting it for a little while. You know, I really wanted to validate myself outside of hockey. And like I said, try to find that new identity for myself. So, you know, I was approached by, you know, some coaches about different opportunities and things like that. You know, I interviewed for an assistant coaching position at UMass Boston, where, you know, the head coach had reached out and said, you know, I think you should be interested in this. I was offered the job and I turned it down. I said, you know, I'm not interested in coaching. I'm really trying to focus on my career, you know, outside of this. And she said, you know, well, why don't you volunteer with us? And so that's actually where it began. You know, I hate saying no to people. I love giving back to the game. I was like, you know, I love having a full plate. I was like, you know, I'm going to work this full-time, you know, 60, 80-hour week consulting job, but like on top of it, like, sure, why not volunteer? Because, you know, it was an opportunity to stay involved in the sport, but I was like, I know that I want a career outside of this. Of course, I was very wrong.
back in.
Exactly. So, you know, I came to kind of a crossroads in my corporate America job, as you said, and another opportunity came across my plate to go work at a prep school and be a head coach there and an assistant athletic director. And I was starting to, you know, be more intrigued by coaching, but just in terms of operations as a whole, like, you know, that part of the job actually really intrigued me to be able to learn about behind the scenes and what, you know, what makes athletics run at a school. And so I took that opportunity and was able to kind of, you know, start to bridge the gap for myself and recognizing that I could find fulfillment in hockey outside of playing it. And so from there, like, you know, I got some great experience and then I went on to coach as an assistant at Harvard University, you know, learned the other side of college hockey, not as a player as well, and the admission process and, you know, scouting and all the ins and outs of video and all that. But I definitely felt as though that coaching wasn't my path. Necessarily, I enjoyed coaching, but you know, I really was kind of longing to have more of the operations that, you know, I had been able to get a taste of at the prep school. So yeah, from there I moved on to work with the East Coast Wizards as a hockey director, and was there for about 6 years. And during my time with the Wizard program, I was approached by Danny Ryland, who was the founder and previous commissioner of the NWHL. So she had this business plan. She said, you know, I know you're really ingrained in the Boston hockey community. Like, I want to start a league that finally pays the players and to provide more teams and more opportunities for women in the United States. So I jumped all in. I didn't look back. I really didn't have too much information at that point, but I just knew it was something that I wanted to help build. And, you know, things have kind of grown from there. So that was, you know, about 6 years ago now. And first two seasons of our league, I was the general manager of our Boston club. and was able to, you know, win an Isabel Cup championship in our first season and, you know, be a contender the next year. We unfortunately lost in a heartbreaking game in the championship the following year. And then, you know, moved on to work at the league level for a couple of years. So I worked as the league's deputy commissioner for a couple of years and just kind of helped us through our next phases of expansion to Minnesota at that point, in developing our league's player development resources and, you know, among other things, new partnerships, new business models and sponsorship growth and player safety growth and all that good stuff. And now, you know, for the past two seasons have been back at the Pride as a team president. Our team was acquired by a private ownership group about a year and a half ago, and they kind of hired me back at the team level to kind of elevate the business operations and try to grow this league and these teams as more of a business moving forward. You know, we're obviously a startup. We're entering our sixth season, and there's just so much more growth and building that needs to be done. So it's been fun to be back at the team level and hopefully win another championship.
How many of the teams have private ownership?
Two do right now. So two of the six.
And then that's kind of the plan for growth for the league is to just kind of sell off, you know, teams and grow.
Exactly. Yeah. So we just underwent a pretty significant restructuring. So we've established a new governance system at the league level, established a board of governors, and are working to sell off those four remaining teams. But the private ownership has really just made some huge strides for us in Boston, and Toronto is the other market that has private ownership at the moment. So it just allows us to really build the resources within the individual team and really grow the business model within our community and, you know, add different resources. So it's just, it's really taken our team in Boston to a new level. And I know the other teams are going to find their way there as well. But it's been really exciting to see in, you know, 5.5 short years, essentially.
I've seen a lot of the growth. You know, it looks great. I love your logo too, by the way.
Well, thank you. It is pretty fierce, right?
That's pretty cool. That's a cool logo. So how do you like team side to league side?
You know? It's interesting. Cause there's so many things that I love about both. And, you know, being at the team level, you get more of that personal connection. You know, you feel the ups and the downs with your team. But that can also be a negative, right? Like the downs, you really feel the ups, you really feel, you're able to be in a position to, you know, win a championship and build those relationships. Whereas like being at the league level, you're actually able to celebrate more for everyone, which is kind of fun and, right, you know, be a fair weather fan for many teams. but you also just, you build a different network. And while you may not have as, close knit of a feeling as you do at the team level, it's really exciting to be a part of a league that has a wider reach and you're able to, you know, work with the teams in so many different capacities. So there's definitely pros and cons to both. And I really enjoyed both of my roles at the team and league levels.
Yeah. I really enjoy, you know, on the team side, just, you know, the connection with the community, you mm-hmm. know, which is always fun. And on the league side, you're just dealing with a lot of different personalities and a lot of different moving parts. And so it's never dull on the league side. But I also like the competition side. So like the team side is fun because even if you're in the front office, you get competitive. It's your team, right? So it's like, you know, it's always fun. So I kind of like you, I'm kind of like mixed on, I like aspects of both, you know, which is pretty cool. So who's like the biggest rival for you guys? Do you have like one team that's like, oh man, we hate them? Like,
yeah, I mean, every team at certain points, there's definitely been some rivalries brewing. And, you know, our league started as four teams. So in those early years, I mean, everyone was your rival. You're playing everyone so many times. But we expanded to Minnesota. Minnesota quickly became a huge rival of ours in Boston. I mean, the two pretty big hockey cities, those games are always pretty exciting. You know, we were neck and neck with them kind of heading into the championship game last year. We definitely were the clear favorites. I just want to make that clear. But they're competitors for sure. And they were reigning champions the year before. We always play in front of sold out crowds in both Minnesota and Boston in those games. So that's a big one. But also heading into this season, Toronto is our expansion team of this year. So we have not played them yet. And there's a huge Boston-Toronto rivalry brewing, especially with them being the other independently owned team in the league. I think that there's a lot brewing there, and we've had a very long preseason. You know, we've been practicing for about 4 months with no games. So
you're ready to take it out on somebody.
Exactly. So it definitely builds. I think that the Toronto will quickly become a pretty big rival for us.
What like size facilities do you typically play in, and what is kind of like, as you're expanding, is there you know, kind of a target that teams should look for?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, in general, our teams play in roughly like 1,000 to 1,500 seat capacity arenas at the moment. And, you know, we try to create the best possible environment for our players. It's a good size for us right now. You know, want to sell out every game. We want to make the demand for those tickets as high as possible, and really just kind of increase the visibility for our team. And hopefully we outgrow those arenas sooner than later as well. But I think it's a perfect spot to be in right now. The environment's awesome. It feels, you know, similar to like a packed college game with a professional element to it. And in Boston, we play at Warrior Arena, which is the Bruins practice facility. It's a beautiful state-of-the-art facility, and, you know, a really clean professional feel. Our fans are great. They pack the house every time. There's, you know, lined up on the glass, standing room only. So it's an awesome environment for our players to play in.
Well, and I think that's important, is to have like a nice atmosphere. And like, I've been in like sporting events, like in a 10,000 seat arena, and there's 1,000 people. That sucks. Like, it's just, it doesn't have that, you know, it's just too big. And you want to have it and grow with it, you know. And, you know, we encountered that too with soccer. You know, some of the teams were just in too big of facilities, and it's hard to create that demand, like you said. But more important, the atmosphere. If it's not electric in there, when you're elbow to elbow, I don't care if there's 500 people, if it's a small facility and you have that, it's going to feel so much bigger, and you know, the energy is going to be able to be felt. And so I think that's pretty cool.
In a world where people are more aware and plugged in than ever, it's not enough to just have a great product. Consumers are looking for brands they can relate to. That's where Egghead Creative comes in. Everything they do is powered by deepening the connection with your brand. And every time you do business with them, they'll build a bespoke team of highly specialized creatives designed specifically around what you need. For more information, visit eggheadcreativestudio.com. That's E-G-G-H-E-A-D creativestudio.com. Or follow them on Instagram at eggheadcreativestudio. Now back to the show.
On your schedule, like, when do you guys, like, what's the season? Is it a normal hockey season, like, time frame?
Yeah, great question. So in a typical year, yes. This year, no. And this year's season is going to be so exciting. But yeah, typically we start our preseason in late September, early October. We'll play some preseason games there, and we kick off the season, you know, late October and go through the end of March. That's our typical season. You know, we try not to overlap with any other major women's events as well. We want to make sure we're doing our part to amplify things like the Women's Frozen Four or the World Championships, events like that. So we do our part to work strategically with the other major women's hockey events throughout the year. But that's our typical season. This year, we have been practicing since late September. We have not played any games yet. And we are just about 2.5 weeks away now from our bubble season. So that'll be taking place in Lake Placid, New York, the historic Herb Brooks Arena. So we will be playing in the 1980 arena, and hopefully creating some history of our own. It should be a pretty awesome environment for our players and setting the stage. It's feeling really exciting now that we're so close. So that's on the docket right now and very exciting as well. We just announced our first broadcast partnership for this event. So our semifinals and cup final will be broadcast live on NBCSN.
Which is
massive. It's the first time that women's professional hockey will air live on a national broadcast. So we're
very, that's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, we're psyched about that. I'm so happy for our players and that, you know, so many people will be exposed to our brand of hockey. It's so exciting. And, you know, our players earned it. They deserve to be in that spotlight. So just psyched. And, you know, hopefully our team is playing in both those games. We got to do the work to get there first.
Yeah. Well, good luck when you're up there. I mean, that's going to be fun. And that's an awesome complex too. Like, so that's going to be just the experience of that alone is going to be pretty cool. So I'll definitely be checking out the social media, see what's going on up there. So what do you think? So what kind of challenges have you guys faced? You know, any new startup league, it's difficult. I mean, it definitely is difficult. Now you guys are, the first or the only women's professional league
currently. Yes.
Yeah.
In North America.
So, you know, what kind of challenges, you know, have you guys had to overcome or that you still kind of face today?
Yeah, so many. I mean, on a bunch of different levels, really. You know, we face the challenges of being a women's sports league and the challenges that come along with that and gaining visibility and traction and awareness. You know, we face the challenge of being a startup business in general. And then, you know, on top of that, I'll throw a pandemic into the mix and
little thing called COVID.
Yeah, those challenges as well. Yeah. But I think, you know, we've just had so many learning moments over the past 5 years. And obviously, you know, with building a league comes missteps and there comes challenges. And when our league started, there was a league north of the border as well, the Canadian Women's Hockey League. And while they didn't pay their players at the time, they were, you know, a partner in this with us in North America. And that league has since folded. And I think now for us trying to establish a presence north of the border has been a challenge, but, you know, an area for opportunity and growth as well. So I think that there's, you know, there's all of the typical challenges that you face as a sports league, as a women's league, as a startup business. And all of that along the way, but you know, every year we've gotten stronger. Every year we've learned something from the past. You know, our Players Association has taken a big role in helping to build this. Our players are remarkable. Like I brag about them all the time, but that's where, you know, our sponsors really feel the impact because our players and our fans are so engaged. You know, their return on investment is incredible because we are all in. Everyone believes in this league. You know, everyone who's a part of it is here to help build. You know, our players will sit and they'll do autographs after games for hours because they want to make sure that every kid is seen and we'll have those autograph sessions after every single home game. So it's just things like that that obviously make that those challenges, you know, worth it. And we overcome it because we're building it together. But yeah, you learn along the way. And you know, there's challenges I'm sure that we don't even see yet too. And working through the pandemic, like I said, is just another one of those, but we aren't unfamiliar to challenge in women's sports in general, I would say. So this, you know, kind of facing the pandemic has just been another set of challenges that, you know, we're used to working through and overcoming.
Got to be ready and willing to pivot and make adjustments. But I think the, you said something that's really important is, you know, people need to be kind of aligned with the vision. And it sounds like, you know, between the players, the staff, the coaches, league, you know, everyone kind of buys into that vision. And that's how you can really get some traction and have some success is when you have too many different people pulling different ways, it makes it difficult. So it's good to hear that, you know, for the most part, everybody is aligned there.
Yeah, it definitely makes it a fun environment to work into, to know that we all have the same vision in mind and we're just working on building that together.
What do you like, you know, how do you go about expanding? Like, you know, I think this TV deal is probably going to help get the league exposure as well throughout other regions of the U.S. But is there anything like that, you know, like, hey, this is how we're going to expand the league?
Yeah, absolutely. And we definitely get asked this question a lot. And there are so many markets that, you know, are begging and dying to have NWHL hockey come to them. And, you know, I wish we could expand to all of them now, but there is a strategy behind it. And, you know, like I said, I think having presence north of the border in Canada was something that was really important to us. You know, I think it was natural that Minnesota was our first expansion market. You know, it's the state of hockey, or so they say.
Okay, I don't hear any.
Yeah, but I think just being strategic and obviously timing our growth so that it is steady and incremental, and you know, getting our bearings with the first couple of seasons before we started off with expansion was really important. You know, we needed to get our feet on the ground and work through some of those early stages before growing. And now, you know, we're in our phase of growth. So, you know, I expect to see another expansion team within the next year and, you know, hopefully continue to grow there. But I would say, you know, more likely than not that the expansion in an additional Canadian market is a likely next step.
Okay, nice. What do you like focused on day to day being like a team president? Like, what kind of stuff do you do? I mean, is it like, you know, most, you know, minor league or, you know, smaller major leagues where it's a lot of hats?
Oh yeah, big time. It's interesting because, you know, we have a really great network with the other Boston professional sports teams here in Boston. You know, so we do a lot of work with the Revs and the Patriots and the Celtics and the Bruins and the Red Sox. And it's funny because I sometimes feel like I'm our representative on like each of those, conversation. So it's like, hey, I'm so-and-so from marketing, and hey, I'm from community relations, and you know, oh, let's take this back to our team. And my team, my business team is still growing. So we definitely wear a lot of hats. I you know, day to day, I'm pretty much involved in every aspect of our team, both hockey operations and business operations. But I have amazing people to work with. You know, we have a general manager who like really makes me not have to think twice about the hockey operations. Like while I'm involved and included in a lot of that, like she's fantastic. Our head coach is great. You know, our whole coaching staff, our team staff, and we're still building out the business staff, but I've been able to add some of those positions. And, when I came into my role, it was the first time that our team had a president. So it was a new role. And the early stages, really the first year in this position, was kind of building out what our structure was going to look like. Where do we want to add positions? You know, how are we going to distribute responsibilities? But, you know, in my role, I am definitely wearing many hats. And, you know, it's everything from marketing to community relations to ticket sales to, you know, customer service and merchandise sales to sponsorship. And you know, I could go on and on, but it's also such a great place to learn all of those things. You know, for me to be able to be exposed to all of it. And, you know, I'm definitely not good at all of those. I've been told since a very young age that like surround yourself with people who can do the things that you can't do.
Yep.
And I just have an awesome team of people that we work with here. So we all are very collaborative. I'd say, you know, even our general manager is involved in like marketing efforts and ideas and things like that. Cause you know, there are a few of us, we run lean. We are growing through this phase, but we have a very collaborative environment. We all kind of lean on each other to get it done.
I don't know if you're looking to add anybody or have internships coming up, but I posted something like a week ago and it was like, just like, hey, if you're, you know, either looking to get in sports or looking for a sports, the post like blew up on me and it's like, it's like almost 400,000 views.
Oh, I believe that.
I've gotten over 2,000 messages, over 500 resumes. It's just, it's nuts. And so there's a lot of people out there that are looking. So if you ever get to the point where you have an internship or an opening, definitely send it over so I can send it out to try to help connect a lot of these people. Cause there's some really good people out there right now that, you know, are looking. So, I think it's a good time for teams as far as finding some great talent, but, it's always tough
with
not knowing when teams are playing, and revenue streams are a lot different now.
I know, it's like as if breaking into the sports world wasn't hard enough. Right. I definitely feel for those candidates. Definitely sent, you know, I'll keep that in mind, and you can send anyone that sounds like they're a good fit for us my way. But I feel for anyone that's, you know, trying to find a career in sports right now. But my advice to them would be that if you ever have the opportunity to work for a women's league or a smaller league, that just for me personally has been the door to being involved in so many different things. You know, I really can't speak enough about the amount of experience I've been able to have in such a short time, because we do run lean, and because, you know, we do collaborate on so many different things, like, you know,
experience in different departments.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's great. I know when I'm looking to hire people, that's something that I always look at is, you know, those internships or what kind of stuff they were exposed to, especially if they're coming to a team that I have that's small, that I know they're going to have to be, you know, a Jack or Jill of all trades. You know, so it's always interesting. In the regular, you talked about you're going to be playing in a bubble. Regular season, like normal times, how many games are there in a season?
Roughly 24. So we typically are a weekend only league. So, you know, we're playing most weekends from mid to late October through March.
Like 12 home, 12 away?
Yeah, something like that. Depending on the season and the number of teams that we have. Exactly.
Nice. How is it in Boston? Do you think that, I mean, because that's such a huge market, do you think that helps or hurts, you know, just with, you know, getting exposure and building an organization there?
Yeah, I think that that's a really interesting question, because we're competing with so many other major sports teams, and not only that, but college teams as well. But Boston has definitely proven to us that we are a sports city. We love our sporting events here, and our fans have been no different with the Pride. You know, they've been just as passionate and loyal and devoted to our team as they have for any other team in the city. So it has benefited us. I think we've been able to gain visibility and awareness through working with these other teams and in our city. And obviously, as just having a pipeline from the colleges that are local here, you know, it's so great that a kid from BU or Harvard or whomever can come to our game on a Saturday night and see what, you know, what playing professionally might look like for them in the next year or two. And that really helps us with the recruiting and just exposure in general. You know, the players that we have, they have their former teammates that can come watch them and things like that. So, I think it was a concern early on, but we've really found our niche, and our fans are amazing, just like they are for everyone else in Boston.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty cool to hear, because it's definitely, you know, it could go either way, but it sounds like you've got the support, and, you know, that region too. I can't imagine how many ice rinks there are. So there's so many, you know, from youth all the way up, you know, people playing.
Exactly.
So I'm sure that helps. One little quick story is, at one point I was involved in hockey, and I always like to think that I'm an athlete. And so, you know, with arena football, I've put pads on and practiced with the team. So I did that in hockey once. I bought like all the gear and everything, because I wanted to have my own, just in case I wanted to keep doing it. And I just remember going out there, and I got trucked, like legit, like, you know, somebody was maybe like skating backwards and turn. It probably was intentional, but, you know, flat out leveled me.
Oh,
and I was like, yeah, okay, this is, but I could skate a lot better with a stick, because it helps keep me
balanced. give you a little balance. You're like a tripod out there.
Yeah, I need the little whatever the thing is that helps the kids skate. That's what I need to learn. But no, it's always fun. I'm a sports fan in general, but love going to hockey games. I lived in Fort Myers area for a bunch of years, so I would go to ECHL down there, the Everblades. So, it definitely is good. Now, do they allow fighting in your league at all?
I would say it's very similar to if you watch women's Olympics or college hockey or men's college hockey.
Here and there.
It's definitely. I mean, there's plenty of aggression. There's not flat out fighting like there is in men's professional leagues. It's similar to men's and women's college hockey.
And yeah. I think even like the ECHL and AHL is mm-hmm. really kind of lowered that. It's definitely not what it was 10 years ago.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think the game's evolved quite a bit from then. So
the one thing I will say is hockey players are tough. I mean, it's a tough sport. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do it. I'm a wuss. I would even just getting knocked down like that. I couldn't imagine.
And you got back up, right?
Yeah, the pads helped, I guess. But no, it's fun. So expand closer to where I'm at, which is in Central Florida.
Okay. And we did have a goalie development camp in Fort Myers a couple of years ago, actually, at the Everglades facility.
Oh, nice.
So we dipped our toes in the water down there. We've done some youth camps with Tampa Bay Lightning. So yeah,
okay.
It's been a good spot. The women...
It'd be a big area for businesses, camps and clinics.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a good way to build that following up, too.
Definitely. Our players, many of them are pretty active and coaching on the youth side as well. And they do a good job as ambassadors for our team and sport. So, yeah, it's a good way to grow the visibility and gain long lifetime fans. So,
yeah.
And hopefully future players too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that'll be the cool stories when you, get to that point where, yeah, I went to, the camp in so-and-so and, mm-hmm. it's going to happen. It's just, it's probably a few years away.
Maybe
close. I mean, you're 6 years in, so.
Yeah, we do have a few of those stories. Like in Boston, we have at least a few players on our team now that I coached when I was at Harvard. We have one player on our team who I coached as a senior in high school and now is in her second season with the Pride. So those things are really fun, to have seen somebody who I coached as a senior in high school before our league even existed. She went through 4 years of college and then, had the opportunity to continue playing and is a standout for us now. So those things are fun. It'll definitely be even more exciting when, like you said, the 10 or 12 year olds that are coming to our camps are, throwing on a jersey in a few years from now.
Yeah, no, that's cool. How about, what's the website? Like, how can people learn more about you guys?
Yeah, you can find us at pride.nwhl.zone. That's our team website. Our merchandise store is bostonpridehockey.com. That has everything you need, but definitely follow us on social media. It's at the Boston Pride on all social medias. We do a great job. Our players actually run our TikTok account, so I apologize for anything you see there, but they do a really good job.
So might be good.
They love it. So they asked if they could have the reins and they just have to ask for approval before posting things. But it is, I know it's a growing world of TikTok and they do a pretty funny job with it. So can follow us as well. Yeah.
It looks like, you're really developing that. I've seen the growth over the last few years, so I'm kind of excited to see, and, I'll tune in and check out the bubble. Appreciate you joining me and, let's stay in touch and hopefully, you're down this way sometime and, I can, come out and check out and maybe I'll see if somebody wants to level me on that.
Yeah. I'm sure one of our players can manage that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I did forget to mention, but all other games will be streamed live on Twitch. So the rest of our games will be live on Twitch. It's our second year working with them and everything else. And we're hopefully playing on NBC Live for you guys and bringing home a cup to Boston. But thank you guys so much for having me.
Hey, podcast fans. Thanks for listening to today's episode of The Andrew Haynes Show. If you enjoyed it, be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you have any questions, be sure to reach out to Andrew on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time.